Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. Today we open with some national news stories on our Capitol report, including President Donald Trump's threats against whistleblowers, and revelations in a New York Times report on White House insiders who say the president wanted to have immigrants shot and install a moat with alligators and snakes at the international border. From Public News Service, we'll also have the latest on the impeachment inquiry in Washington and an executive order signed by President Trump impacting Medicare recipients. Plus, we'll have information on Senator Bernie Sanders, who has been hospitalized for treatment of a heart condition, but whom aides say will be back on the campaign trail soon. In local news, county supervisors are considering a ban on flavored tobaccos used in vaping, and the Mayo Clinic has announced chemicals may be responsible for burned lungs in a public health crisis that has hospitalized over 1,000 people and killed 18, all tied to vaping and e-cigarette use. Lemon Grove is having a juicy debate on a proposed sales tax increase, and you'll hear both sides on today's show. La Mesa is moving closer to a police oversight citizens committee, and the city has also legalized recreational cannabis businesses, as well as grants to help clean up blighted areas in West La Mesa. Gun owners in San Diego have filed a lawsuit challenging a new California gun law, and we'll have details. SDG&E has formed a wildfire safety advisory council with community leaders. Dog owners will want to listen up today for information on a recall of certain raw dog food products contaminated with both listeria and salmonella. The rainy season is coming. Hear how you can get discounted rain barrels available. Now, if you've seen social media posts about a leprosy outbreak in Los Angeles, don't panic. It turns out it's fake news, and we'll have details. On Crime Beat, learn about an arrest made in a cold case murder in Spring Valley. The county has a new grant program to battle opioid addiction, and a new California law is set to create public banks. And finally, on Destination East County, hear about festivities coming up, including Oktoberfests, farm festivals, Kids Care Fest, haunting Halloween happenings, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Capitol Report. As impeachment inquiries move forward in Congress, President Donald Trump is drawing criticism and alarm for threatening whistleblowers, accusing a prominent member of Congress of treason, and suggesting that impeachment could ignite civil war. Attorneys for the whistleblower, whose complaint launched the impeachment inquiry against Trump, have sent letters to the acting director of National Intelligence and to chairs of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, requesting federal protection for their client. The attorneys' letters cite overt threats made by the president accusing whistleblowers and leakers of treason, a crime punishable by death. On September 26, Trump stated during a meeting with the United Nations leaders caught on tape by the Los Angeles Times, "I want to know who's the person that gave the whistleblower the information, because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? With spies and treason, right? We used to handle them a little differently than we do now." The attorney's letter states that a $50,000 bounty has also been offered for information leading to the whistleblower's identity, further imperiling the safety of the whistleblower, who has indicated that he or she wants to testify before Congress. Threatening a federal witness is a felony. Witness tampering is punishable by up to 20 years in federal prison if a threat of violence is made. Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, has also accused the president of witness tampering after Cohen cooperated with prosecutors. Trump made repeated veiled threats again in a series of tweet storms over the weekend, demanding to know the identity of the whistleblower. He also lashed out against Congressman Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, who is leading an impeachment investigation. Trump tweeted, "I want Schiff questioned at the highest level for fraud and treason." Trump's attack on Schiff came after Schiff likened Trump's actions toward the Ukrainian president to an organized crime shakedown and paraphrased some of the president's statements, enraging Trump. In another tweet, Trump called several other members of Congress who support impeachment savages. The whistleblower complaint, which the New York Times reports was filed by a CIA agent stationed in the White House, accuses Trump of abusing his power by pressuring a foreign leader to find dirt on a political rival for Trump's personal gain, then covering up the evidence by ordering call records locked up. The gist of the whistleblower's complaint is corroborated by a rough transcript released by the White House. That partial transcript confirms that Trump did ask Ukraine's president to investigate the son of former Vice President Joe Biden, Trump's political rival in the 2020 election, for Trump's personal gain. In that call, the transcript quotes Trump asking the Ukraine's president to work with Attorney General William Barr and Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, to investigate Hunter Biden, who worked for a Ukrainian oil company. Ukraine's prosecutor has cleared Hunter Biden of wrongdoing. Despite this, Trump pressured the Ukrainian president to launch a new investigation, 1 week after unilaterally ordering U.S. aid to the Ukraine withheld, even though the Ukraine needed that military aid to combat Russian forces. James Madison, in supporting an impeachment clause to the Constitution, specifically cited his concern over the potential for a leader to, quote, pervert his administration into a scheme of peculation or oppression. He might betray his trust to foreign powers. Peculation, incidentally, means embezzlement or personal enrichment. No modern president has accused congressional investigators of treason, even during the Watergate investigation of Richard Nixon, or the impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton, nor the repeated investigations of the Obama investigation. Trump, who has denied wrongdoing, drew further criticism from some for potentially inciting violence when he paraphrased a supporter and tweeted over the weekend, "If the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, which they will never be, it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal." The Civil War tweet drew condemnation from Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger. "I have visited nations ravaged by civil war," Kinzinger posted on Twitter, adding, "I have never imagined such a quote to be repeated by a president. This is beyond repugnant."
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Capitol Report. A New York Times report based on interviews with a dozen White House officials described disturbing statements by President Donald Trump last March, when he repeatedly pressed aides to take illegal actions toward migrants before ultimately ordering the border shut down. Quote, "Privately, the president had often talked about fortifying a border wall with a water-filled trench stocked with snakes or alligators, prompting aides to seek a cost estimate. He wanted the wall electrified, with spikes on top that would pierce human flesh," the Times reports. After publicly suggesting that soldiers shoot migrants if they threw rocks, the president backed off when his staff told him that it was illegal. But later, in a meeting, aides recalled, he suggested that they shoot migrants in the legs to slow them down. "That's not allowed either," they told him. Trump dismissed the Times report in a tweet, calling it fake news and misspelling moat as moot. Aides told the Times that Trump went into a rage and ordered the entire border shut down, ignoring warnings that this would have serious negative economic impacts in the U.S., trap U.S. tourists in Mexico, and strand children at schools. The shutdown cost the San Diego region millions of dollars in lost tourism and shopping dollars, the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce has indicated. Trump often showed exasperation with aides, but voiced glee when hearing that Border Patrol agents had fired tear gas at refugees in Mexico to stop them from crossing the border. After a contract for a metal border fence was approved, Trump demanded it be changed to concrete. He later reportedly ordered wall building sped up and told aides to take the land and let the property owner sue the government. When told by Kirstjen Nielsen, Homeland Security Secretary, that firing on drones was illegal, he reportedly fired back, "Shoot 'em down, sweetheart, just shoot 'em out of the sky." The Times report indicates that Trump purged his inner circle of top cabinet officials and aides who tried to keep the president acting within the confines of the law. Notably, Kirstjen Nielsen was ordered to resign after urging the president
to use legal means to control the border, including the courts and Congress. The purge staffers were replaced by followers in line with policies of Stephen Miller, an immigration hardliner with racist white nationalist ties. The president's urging of staff to violate U.S. and international laws will likely add fuel to the fires fanning impeachment efforts in the House. The impeachment inquiry was sparked when a whistleblower reported that Trump withheld military aid from the Ukraine, while pressuring Ukraine's president to launch an investigation into the son of former Vice President Joe Biden, a leading Democratic candidate in the 2020 presidential election.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, October 4th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. The State Department's former special envoy to Ukraine met behind closed doors Thursday with congressional investigators to discuss whether President Donald Trump and his allies improperly pressured Ukrainian officials to investigate Joe Biden. The meeting with Kurt Volker is the House Democrats' first deposition in their impeachment inquiry. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi launched the process last week after the revelation that Trump urged his Ukrainian counterpart to probe Biden during a July phone call. Volker reportedly told House investigators that he urged Ukraine's leadership not to interfere in U.S. politics after the call. The New York Times is reporting that Volker and another envoy to Ukraine drafted a statement for that country in August that would have committed Ukraine to launching investigations into the president's political rivals. President Trump signed an executive order Thursday to expand private Medicare insurance plans. The order directs the Secretary of Health and Human Services to propose new regulations that would enable Medicare Advantage plans to offer more flexible plans and boost the use of telehealth services. It also supports expansion of health savings accounts. More than 20 million people are enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans, a number that's expected to keep rising. Critics are calling the order pro-insurance. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener-supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who has consistently polled among the top three Democratic presidential contenders, has been hospitalized after experiencing chest pain Tuesday evening at a campaign event. Testing revealed a blocked artery, and Sanders underwent surgery to insert two stents. His campaign has canceled all events until further notice. Sanders was slated to visit California this week. His campaign senior advisor, Jeff Weaver, issued a statement Wednesday which said Sanders is conversing and in good spirits, but will be resting up for a few days. The 78-year-old senator was hospitalized just hours after his campaign announced a record $25 million in contributions in the third quarter of the year. The oldest senator in the race, he has a family history of longevity. But rigors of the campaign trail can take their toll, and it is unclear how the health setback may impact his presidential aspirations. This is the second time Sanders has run for president. In 2016, he came in a close second after Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, galvanizing many young voters and inspiring many new voters to head to the polls. He is the first major presidential candidate to openly espouse democratic socialism, calling for policies such as universal health care for all Americans. Several of Sanders' Democratic rivals in the primary have tweeted get-well messages, including California Senator Kamala Harris, who wished Sanders a speedy recovery and called him a fighter. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who hosted a town hall in San Diego this week, also sent Sanders best wishes, adding, "I hope to see my friend back on the campaign trail very soon." Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
San Diego supervisors Diane Jacob and Nathan Fletcher are calling for a ban on sales and distribution of e-cigarettes and flavored tobacco products. Their proposals will be heard by supervisors on October 15th. The proposed vaping products ban in the unincorporated areas comes amid rising concerns over more than 800 hospitalizations and 22 deaths nationwide linked to vaping. Most of these cases, though not all, have been linked to vaping of THC or marijuana products, and a federal investigation continues. Supervisor Jacob says vaping-related illnesses are a grave concern, and we must take local action to address this fast-growing public health crisis. Teenagers and young adults have been the hardest hit, and we must stand up to vaping manufacturers that are preying on them for profit. El Cajon is also considering restrictions on sales of vaping products on October 8th. Lemon Grove and La Mesa are also considering taking action to prevent vaping deaths. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
According to a new report by the Mayo Clinic, lung biopsies reveal damage consistent with chemical burns, leading researchers to suspect chemical additives may be to blame for over 1,000 serious lung injury cases and 18 deaths nationwide, all associated with vaping or e-cigarette use. County public health officials and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control are also advising people to stop vaping as investigators continue looking into what's causing a nationwide epidemic of respiratory illnesses among those that use the e-cigarettes and vaping products. Many, but not all, of the cases involved vaping THC or marijuana products purchased on the black market. However, even some legally sold tobacco-based vaping products have been linked to lung damage, which may be permanent in some cases. Teenagers and young people have been the hardest hit. Nearly 2 out of 3 people affected by e-cigarette illnesses are under 24 years old, according to County News Services. Supervisors are expected to vote on the vaping product ban on October 15th. El Cajon will consider restrictions on vaping products on October 8th, and Lemon Grove as well as La Mesa are also considering drafting ordinances to address this public health crisis, sources in both cities have told East County Magazine. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A proposed Lemon Grove ballot measure called the Lemon Grove Security Petition would increase sales tax by 0.75 cents, and it's prompting a juicy debate. Supporters led by former Lemon Grove Councilman George Gastel says this measure will sweeten Lemon Grove by shoring up a budget deficit to fund services wanted by residents such as parks, road repairs, and improved public safety. But former Lemon Grove Councilwoman Mary England, who is also president of the Chamber of Commerce in neighboring La Mesa, is sour on the idea. Both England and Gastel agree that the city has had a structural deficit for years, with a budget that's used almost entirely to fund sheriff and fire protection services, costs that continue going up while revenues have not. But they disagree sharply on solutions. Is the only way to dig out of the financial hole that the city of Lemon Grove continues to wallow in a sales tax increase? England asked in a memo sent to the city council last year. England says the increase burdens residents, businesses, and future generations in a city with a high poverty rate and only a limited retail selection. She contends that even if a sales tax increase passes, it may not be enough to solve the city's financial problems, since Lemon Grove lacks shopping malls and tourism destinations that other neighboring cities can rely on to generate substantial sales tax revenues. She wants to see the city consider other options instead, such as eliminating its assistant city manager, cutting some staff to part-time, selling off surplus land, and outreaching to businesses and realtors for ideas. In addition, England contends that the city should research the option of disincorporating or ceasing to become a city and reverting back to county control. But Gastel fires back. I am pretty sure National City and El Cajon have high rates of poverty, and they have passed sales taxes that benefit their city residents. He adds, the poor pay a small proportion of the money collected by sales taxes, but they get a large proportion of the benefit. Who suffers most when there are budget cuts? Gastel asks, noting that older residents are most likely to call emergency services and low-income residents are most likely to need protection provided by the sheriff, while families with young children have the most need for parks. He notes that Lemon Grove does have Home Depot, 3 major grocery stores, and other businesses that generate sales tax. The city estimates that a 0.75 cent tax would generate $2.9 million each year. We believe businesses benefit from having a strong city, Gastel said, adding that businesses benefit from city services such as law enforcement and street cleaning. Could we do better, he asks, then answers, yes, we could, with more stable funding. He says staff cuts are not feasible because the city staff is already stretched to the limit. About a third of the city's staffers were laid off in the recession, and most of those jobs were never restored. As for selling surplus land, Gastel says he believes most residents want the city's small amount of land to be used to benefit the public. England has criticized elected officials in Lemon Grove in what she calls a leadership deficit, but Gastel says there's a solution for that. They work for us, he says. If they don't do a good job, we can replace them. Disincorporating would be a long process that Gastel says the city manager has briefed council members on in the past. He contends that a sales tax increase is needed to fill the budget gap even short term, even if disincorporation were to become necessary down the road. Gastel acknowledges that a sales tax measure is only part of a larger solution that should include economic development to attract more sales tax generation businesses and customers for those businesses. Another option could be to attract higher income residents through newer housing to bring in property tax revenues while being careful not to lose Lemon Grove's reputation as a relatively affordable city. Gastel says, I think I speak for most residents when I say we need a balance. If the sales tax initiative fails, deep budget cuts would have to be made, including to public safety, the lion's share of the city budget, city leaders warn. Gastel says many business owners have been involved in discussions and will support the initiative if it qualifies for the ballot. Businesses were a key factor in the creation of the city, and they will be a key factor in keeping it going, he predicts. While the long-term future for Lemon Grove remains uncertain, he concludes, we can say this much for sure. A 3/4 of a cent sales tax will put us in a much stronger position to take on our challenges. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Gerald Stevenson.
La Mesa has moved a step closer to providing citizens oversight of its police department, but not as far as many community members had hoped to go. At a city council meeting September 10th, Police Chief Walt Vasquez presented a report on citizen police oversight practices. He recommended appointment of an 11-member citizen public safety panel to exchange information on improving public safety, but the panel would lack investigative powers to examine complaints against the police department. Several members of the public testified against the chief's proposal. Councilwoman Dr. Akilah Weber questioned Chief Vasquez on whether he adequately canvassed residents for input. Calls for a Citizens Oversight or Review Commission arose after a video went viral, showing a La Mesa police officer forcing an unarmed female student to the ground at Helix High School in January 2018. The student recently settled with the city for an undisclosed amount. The city ordered an independent review which found no wrongdoing by police. But council members and the public were dismayed to learn that state law prohibited them from reading the full report, which was provided only to the police chief. Mayor Mark Rapostathis agreed on the need for transparency and more public input. He said the city needs to cast a wider net to get everyone's perspectives on oversight. A key stumbling block is that in general law cities, such as La Mesa, police oversight is vested in the chief, unlike in many charter cities. Councilman Baber said one option would be to change the state law. Given that Councilwoman Weber's mother is Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, who has authored major police reform bills signed into law, a legislative fix could happen. Councilwoman Christine Alicio acknowledged frustration in the community. She said the chief was trying to create, quote, the functional equivalent of what the citizens are asking for. Ultimately, the city council agreed to the composition of the public safety panel proposed by the chief with two changes, the youth slot going to a high school student, and a member of the police officer association will fill one of the two slots formerly allocated to the business community. Rather than being responsible for police oversight, the group will survey the community for input, analyze other similarly sized general law cities, then establish its own recommendation for the city council in consultation with the chief, lawyers, and the public. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
La Mesa City Council has voted unanimously to legalize recreational cannabis businesses, including dispensaries, manufacturing, testing, indoor growing, and delivery services. The new ordinance will allow sales of recreational marijuana only by dispensaries that have already applied for licenses to sell medical marijuana. That's up to 17 dispensaries in La Mesa, a city of just 9 square miles, if all applications are approved. Dispensaries can open in any commercial district in La Mesa, but manufacturing, testing, and cultivation can only be done in the city's industrial area. Councilman Bill Baber, backer of the measure, says he introduced it to respect the will of the voters. Fully 59% of La Mesa voters approved Proposition 64, which legalized adult use of cannabis statewide in 2018. Over half the city's voters, 53%, approved Measure U, which legalized medicinal cannabis in La Mesa, while 78% approved the city's Measure V last year, allowing taxation of both medical and recreational cannabis. Several people spoke in favor of the ordinance, including a spokesman from Urban Leaf, a chain of cannabis retailers, who said this company will hire at least 100 employees in La Mesa and pay them a living wage. No one spoke against the measure, although Community Action Service and Advocacy, or CASA, sent a letter to the council members voicing concern over a potential increase in crime and addiction if the measure were approved. But Councilman Baber believes that capitalism in the form of legal cannabis businesses will drive illegal operations out of La Mesa. Illegal pot shops have taken up considerable time and money for law enforcement, also causing vandalism and blight. So the council also approved using a portion of tax revenues from licensed recreational marijuana businesses to provide grants to neighboring property owners to clean up graffiti, repair vandalism, and make other improvements to reduce blight in West La Mesa areas negatively impacted by the illegal pot shops. The council also approved a pilot program for micro-grants for property owners in the vicinity to improve the streetscape, such as through painting, power washing, landscaping, and public art. The program will be funded through money donated back to the city by three council members who agreed to give up their expense reimbursements, council members Christine Alicio, Akila Weber, and Bill Baber. The grants came about thanks to the efforts of Envision La Mesa, a citizens group that formed on a next-door forum. The group held trash cleanup days and conducted a block-by-block survey of areas along University Avenue and La Mesa and El Cajon Boulevards to document properties that were eyesores and make recommendations for improvements to the city council. Craig Reed, an organizer of the group, told the council that when police shut down illegal dispensaries, they left in a hurry, and they left in a mess. Now, with a little help from the new grant programs, the citizens hope their neighborhoods will once again be safe for residents and welcoming for visits. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
A lawsuit filed in federal court in San Diego is challenging California's gun law, Senate Bill 1100, which was signed into law last year. The law bans the sale of long guns, such as rifles, to people under age 21. Handgun sales to those under 21 were already illegal under California law. Military service members, law enforcement officers, and licensed hunters are exempted from the law and can still own firearms. Senator Anthony Portantino, a Democrat, authored the bill, which became law in January after former Governor Jerry Brown signed it. It was introduced in response to the shooting deaths of 17 people at a Parkland, Florida high school by a 19-year-old gunman. Locally, mass school shootings at Granite Hills High School and Cleveland Elementary were committed by shooters under 21, both with long guns. Portantino's bill would make it harder for such tragedies to occur by prohibiting teens and children from owning most guns. Senator Portantino stated when his bill was signed, "I feel it is imperative that California leads when Washington refuses to act. No parent should have to worry that a gun gets in the wrong hands and commits a heinous and violent tragedy on our school campuses." Each year, nearly 2,900 children and teens are shot and killed, and over 15,000 of them are shot and injured. That's an average of 51 American young people every day. Of those killed, 1,000 of them are suicides. Over 400 school shootings occurred from 2013 to 2015 alone, and in many of those cases, the shooter was under 21, according to data compiled by Everytown Research. But the lawsuit argues that California's restrictions on gun ownership by minors violates the Second Amendment, and that adults over age 18 who are not convicted felons or mentally ill should be able to buy guns. The plaintiffs include two local gun owners under 21, as well as four gun advocate groups, and three retail gun shops in San Diego County. The defendants are California Attorney General Javier Becerra and Martin Horan, Director of the California Department of Justice Bureau of Firearms. The lawsuit was filed by Carlsbad Attorney John Dillon. He says once individuals turn 18, they are considered adults in the eyes of the law. Therefore, law-abiding adults are entitled to fully exercise all of their fundamental rights, including their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms for all lawful purposes, not just hunting or sport. Gene Hoffman, chairman of CalGuns Foundation, is one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. He says California cannot deny a fundamental enumerated right to adults over the age of 18 that have no disqualifying criminal or mental health history. Firearms aren't the only products, however, regulated by age in our state. California has long banned sales of tobacco products to people under age 21 and more recently added the same restriction for marijuana products. But there's no constitutional protection for smoking or drug use, unlike gun ownership. The Supreme Court has recognized some limits on gun ownership, however, previously denying an appeal of a Maryland law that banned sales of assault weapons, allowing the ban to remain in effect. The San Diego challenge to California's gun law filed in federal court could ultimately be appealed to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not states have the power to limit gun sales to young people. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
To strengthen wildfire preparedness and prevention in the region, San Diego Gas and Electric has formed the SDG&E Wildfire Safety Community Advisory Council, a group of diverse local leaders from public safety, tribal government, business, nonprofit, and academic organizations. The members will provide feedback and recommendations on how SDG&E can protect the region from wildfires. Since the 2007 firestorms, when state regulators found that SDG&E equipment was the cause of three fires, a contention the company disputed, SDG&E has invested $1.5 billion in fire prevention. Those investments include building a network of 190 weather stations, installing fire-detecting cameras on mountaintops, bringing in firefighting helicopters, replacing wood poles with steel poles, and establishing partnerships with public safety agencies and communities to enhance emergency preparedness and response. Caroline Wynn, SDG&E's Chief Operating Officer, says formation of the Wildfire Safety Advisory Council is a continuation of our work in partnership with the best and the brightest in our region to help make every day safer than the last for the communities we are privileged to serve. This 10-member advisory council includes Don Butts, Lakeside Fire Chief and President of the County Fire Chiefs Association, Tony Meacham, CAL FIRE San Diego Chief, Bo Mazzetti, Chairman of the Rincon Band of Luiseno Indians and Chairman of the California Tribal Chairpersons Association, Debbie Case, President of Meals on Wheels locally, Dr. Neil Driscoll, Professor of Geosciences at UCSD, John Ohanian, the head of 211 San Diego, Holly Porter, Director of the County's Office of Emergency Services, Jerry Sanders, CEO of the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, Brett Van Way, former San Marcos Fire Chief, and former San Diego Police Chief Shelley Zimmerman. This accomplished group of community leaders will provide insight, ideas, and recommendations on public safety, wildfire matters, community preparedness, regional coordination, use of emerging technologies, and best practices. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued a warning for dog owners about performance dog frozen raw foods, which have tested positive for both salmonella and listeria. Bravo Packing, Inc. performance dog products are sold frozen in plastic pouches. These dog foods pose a serious threat to human and animal health, the FDA warns. If you have any performance dog raw food purchased after July 22nd, throw it away in a secure container where pets and wildlife cannot access it or return it to your retailer for a refund. Clean your freezer or refrigerator where the product was stored. Also clean and disinfect all bowls, utensils, food prep surfaces, pet bedding, toys, floors, and any other surfaces that the food or your dog may have had contact with. Wash your hands after handling the product or cleaning up potentially contaminated items. Also clean up dog droppings in your yard or wherever you walk your dog to avoid exposing others to this illness, the FDA advises. Pet foods and treats contaminated by Salmonella or Listeria can affect both people and animals. Pets can get sick or be carriers and pass the bacteria on to humans without appearing to be ill. People can get sick from handling contaminated pet foods and treats or touching contaminated surfaces and spread it by touching other items. Bravo Packing has previously recalled all of its performance dog frozen raw pet foods last year due to Salmonella. Also, back in 2016, an inspection found horse meat in its pet food tested positive for the drugs pentobarbital and phenytoin. Pets can become ill but can also be carriers of Salmonella or Listeria, these diseases, even without getting sick, spreading contamination. Salmonella is a bacterium that can cause illness and death in humans and animals, especially those who are very young, very old, or have weak immune systems. Symptoms in people include fever, severe diarrhea, and cramps. Most people recover without treatment, but the bacteria can spread to the bloodstream, in which case prompt treatment with antibiotics is needed. Pets don't always show symptoms when infected with Salmonella, but signs can include vomiting, diarrhea, fever, loss of appetite, or decreased activity level. Listeria is also a bacterium that can cause illness and death in humans and animals, especially those who are pregnant, very young, very old, or have weak immune systems. Symptoms in humans can include headache, stiff neck, confusion, loss of balance, and convulsions, in addition to fever and muscle aches. Pregnant women usually experience only fever and other flu-like symptoms, but Listeria infections in pregnancy can lead to miscarriage, stillbirth, premature delivery, or life-threatening infection of the newborn. Listeria infections are uncommon in pets, though possible. Symptoms may include mild to severe diarrhea, fever, muscular and respiratory signs, neurological symptoms, miscarriage, depression, shock, or even death. If you have symptoms of Salmonella or Listeria, you should consult your doctor. If your pet has symptoms, or if your dog ate performance dog raw food purchased after July 22nd, you should consult your veterinarian. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is Jonathan Goetz with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The rainy season is coming, but you still have time to get a rain barrel to harvest the upcoming rains, cut your watering costs, and protect local beaches by reducing pollution. Through October 1st, county residents can get a discounted top-of-the-line rain barrel by ordering one online, thanks to San Diego County's Watershed Protection Program and the nonprofit Solana Center. Here's how to do it. San Diego County residents can order a rain barrel online at solanacenter.org. That's solanacenter.org. Through Sunday, October 13th. County residents who get their water from the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California through the San Diego County Water Authority or its participating member agencies in San Diego County can apply for a hefty rebate. And the County of San Diego is giving out its own discount to residents living in unincorporated areas on the first 200 rain barrels ordered. Qualify for the rebate and discount, and the price of your $90 rain barrel is just $25. The rain barrels will not be shipped, and you must arrange to pick it up at one of several locations. Having a rain barrel can let you harvest rain right off your roof and use it to keep your gardens or lawns green the old-fashioned way. That can cut your water costs and even help protect our local beaches by preventing excess rain from washing pollution off our roofs and yards and down our streets to the ocean.
An article published by the London tabloid Daily Mail and cited by some major U.S. media outlets falsely suggested an outbreak of leprosy among homeless people in Los Angeles to be an imminent threat. The Daily Mail quoted Dr. Mark Siegel as stating, "Leprosy appearing among the homeless in LA is a sure recipe for instant public panic." But Associated Press has debunked the story. The Los Angeles County Health Department confirms that the rate of leprosy has stayed steady for the past decade, averaging only 2 cases a year, and none of those were transmitted locally, AP reports. This year, only a single case has occurred. There are other diseases, such as typhoid fever and hepatitis A, that have been diagnosed in limited numbers in Los Angeles and that city health officials have linked to homeless populations, but not leprosy. Leprosy, also called Hansen's disease, is rare in the U.S. worldwide. About 200,000 cases are diagnosed, with over half of those in India. In the U.S., leprosy can be transmitted by armadillos, animals not found in California. The bacterial disease affects the skin and peripheral nervous system. Left untreated, it can cause blindness, muscle and bone damage, and severe disfigurement. The disease can take several years from exposure to diagnose. It is generally transmitted through long-term exposure to a person with the disease, including through coughing and sneezing. Unlike medieval times, when lepers were isolated in leper colonies, today there are treatments for leprosy. In fact, leprosy can now be cured with multi-drug therapy, a combination of three antibiotics, rifampin, clofazimine, and dapsone. Treatment can take from 6 months to a year or more. People are no longer contagious after about 1 week of this treatment, according to a fact sheet published at leprosy.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Crime Beat Report. A cold case murder in Spring Valley has reportedly been solved. The killing of 52-year-old Stanford Johnson occurred back on December 6, 2012. Deputies asked to conduct a welfare check on Johnson found the back door open at his home on Lemon Street in Spring Valley. Inside, they discovered Johnson dead of multiple stab wounds. 7 years later, sheriff's homicide investigators announced the arrest of 49-year-old Waverly James for the crime, says Lieutenant Chad Bourdreau. He was arrested in New York and has been extradited to San Diego, where he has been charged with murder.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
In the midst of record-setting prescription drug deaths, the County of San Diego has received a grant from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to strengthen the local fight against opioids. The $6.5 million grant over 3 years is part of a $1.8 billion national push by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services to combat opioid addiction and deaths. Nationwide, 16 cities and counties received grants. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says, "This funding will help us take critical steps needed to help reverse the course of the growing opioid crisis. The funds will be used to help prevent overdoses, develop systems to support coordinated and timely detections of potentially harmful events, train providers, help people access drug treatment and recovery care, and more." Opioid overdose deaths in San Diego County have increased steadily over the last decade. San Diego County's opioid crisis has mainly involved prescription opioids, but synthetic opioids such as fentanyl are now a deadly trend, with an 82% increase in deaths involving fentanyl. In the county, fentanyl-related deaths now surpass heroin-related deaths. The economic impact of lost productivity, increased health care, and criminal justice costs due to opioids was estimated at $950 million in 2016. Supervisor Kristen Daspar says opioid addiction can happen to anyone, and it can happen very quickly. With prescription pills in many medicine cabinets, she says it's important to talk to families and to educate the community on safe use, safe storage, and safe disposal of these highly addictive medications. Overdose deaths are preventable, she says, and it starts by having these conversations. If you or someone you care about needs treatment for drug addiction, you can call the Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
California may have a new type of bank by next year, the result of a bill signed Thursday by Governor Gavin Newsom that sets up rules for the creation of public banks. The new financial institutions would be owned by and would primarily serve public agencies, and unlike private banks, they'll be required to put the public good over profits. Debbie Notkin with the California Public Banking Alliance predicts the agencies will save a ton of money.
Local public banks return the money that cities and counties now pay in fees and interest back to those cities and counties as bank profits.
The only public bank in the U.S. right now is the Bank of North Dakota, which has been around for about a century and makes about 18% in profits each year. Wall Street banks have criticized California's legislation, saying banking is too complex to be entrusted to the government. However, Notkin notes all five of the biggest Wall Street banks have felony charges on their records and have paid huge fines for their misdeeds in recent years. She's also convinced that public banks will be more responsive to local and regional concerns.
We'll be in a position to build affordable housing at reasonable rates, to do wildfire mitigation, all the things that California really needs, our own banks can help us do.
The first public bank may spring from Alameda County and a coalition of agencies in the East Bay, perhaps by the end of 2020. The cities of San Francisco and Los Angeles are also moving quickly to establish public banks. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features lots of October events, including Oktoberfests in El Cajon and La Mesa, a fall festival in Hakumba Hot Springs, Kids Care Fest in Lemon Grove, the Ramona Air Fair, Fall at the Farm, and Julian's Autumn Jubilee.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including Miss Smarty Plants Goes Batty at the Water Conservation Garden, La Mesa's Fair Trade Gift Fair, vocalist Lillian Palmer at Mission Trails Church, headliner shows at the Magnolia Center in El Cajon, a chamber music series at Cuyamaca College, the Borrego Days Desert Festival and Parade, Pints for the Park in Borrego Springs, and a Green Homes Tour.
Halloween happenings include Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon, Halloween costume contests for people and dogs at Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center, and Trunk or Treat in downtown El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to don your lederhosen for the 46th annual La Mesa Oktoberfest, which is gearing up for over 100,000 revelers celebrating German traditions October 4th through 6th. La Mesa's Oktoberfest features three beer halls, including a new Palm Avenue location with flowing pints of craft beer and Oktoberfest games. You can bring your dancing shoes to step lively to traditional German music, non-traditional entertainment, and the chicken dance. Guests can also savor authentic food, festivities, and family-friendly activities such as a German Kinder Carnival, complete with Ferris wheel, rock climbing wall, inflatable slides, interactive art, bratwurst eating competitions, scavenger hunts, and the ever-popular Wiener Dachshund races. There will also be over 200 vendor booths with everything from handmade crafts to holiday-themed decor. And for more information, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org.
Grossmont Healthcare District invites you to Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 5th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at the Lemon Grove Recreation Center in Lemon Grove. This event includes healthy fun for the kid in all of us, including fun and active games, plus dental and vision screenings, flu shots, and more. For details, visit kidscarefest.org.
The Hakumba Community Services District invites you to its fall festival on Saturday, October 5th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Hakumba Community Park on Old Highway 80. This event features live music, food from Jay's Southern Cafe, raffles for adults, youths, and children, plus vendor booths. All proceeds benefit the community park.
The 24th annual Ramona Airfare and Fly-In is coming to the county's Ramona Airport on Saturday, October 5th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. This year's event will feature displays of airplanes, helicopters, tours of CAL FIRE and U.S. Forest Service firefighting aircraft, rides on tethered hot air balloons, and with experimental aircraft. The Ramona Airfare will also feature meet and greets with the Red Eagles Formation Team, Ramona Rattlers, March Aero Club, and Air Group One. Tours of the airport's other facilities, including the Classic Rotors Museum and the Control Tower, will be available. Visitors can also enjoy a classic car show, meet Smokey Bear, relax in the Hangar 24 Beer Garden, Enjoy food from food trucks and listen to live music performed by country artist Whiskey Ridge. An all-day kids zone will include face painting, balloon making, and pinatas.
Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures will host its Julian Autumn Jubilee each weekend in October. Fort Cross is located on Highway 78 in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian. The hours are Saturdays 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from 11:15 to 5 p.m. All are welcome to enjoy visiting the You Pick Pumpkin Patch. Additional activities are available for a fee and packages are available. Options include cider pressing and tasting, mini pumpkin painting, a petting zoo, reptile show, hayride, hoedown, candle making, tire swings, archery, tomahawk throwing, and paintballs at the Ghost Town Slingshot Range. Guests are welcome to bring a picnic lunch to enjoy with views of Vulcan Mountain. You can get more information at fortcross.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a full season of stellar entertainment lined up. Concerts coming up in the last half of October are triple Grammy Award winner Bruce Hornsby, who formerly performed with the Grateful Dead, and his band, The Noisemakers, The Taj Express, MasterChef Junior, Latin American singer Leo Dan, Grammy Award-winning singers Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo, the legendary singer Engelbert Humperdinck, and progressive metal band Dream Theater. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The Echo Chamber Music Series hosts 14 concerts at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Theater this season, featuring classical music performers such as Jason Vo, Bach Collegium, the Dolly Quartet, members of the San Diego Symphony, and other internationally acclaimed musicians who have performed across the globe. The season runs from now through June 4th. Find a full list of performers and ticket information at echochambermusic.org. And that's ECHO.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend now through October 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hayrides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry, and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. There's also a seasonal farm store featuring country wares and more. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the You Pick link to find activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
Are you ready to have fun and learn about creatures who go boo in the night? The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College invites you to don your Halloween costume for Ms. Smarty Plants Goes Batty on October 12th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. This event features a Ms. Smarty Plants show, trick-or-treat trails, and creepy critter encounters for a spooktacular good time. For tickets, you can visit thegarden.org.
Just in time for holiday shopping, La Mesa Fair Trade will host a gift fair on Sunday, October 13th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. The event features sales of handcrafted fair trade gifts, home decor, clothing, and jewelry through a variety of vendors. There will also be fair trade coffee, teas, ice cream, and chocolate to savor. The goal of fair trade is to assure fair wages to create brighter futures for families in developing countries. For more information, you can call 619-466-3241.
Vocalist Lillian Palmer has performed in concert at performing arts centers across our region and at the Old Globe Theater. Next up, she'll be singing at Mission Trails Church, located on Zion Avenue in San Diego, on October 13th from 3 to 4 p.m. She began her vocal study at age 15 with classical music. She then moved on to musical theater and discovered her passion for American popular music. Now she sings jazz, swing, Latin, and music from the Great American Songbook. Her concert is part of the Second Sunday's concert series held each month at the Mission Trails Church.
The 52nd annual Borrego Days Desert Festival in Borrego Springs will be held Friday through Sunday, October 18th through the 20th. This year's theme is Bloom in Borrego. The Borrego Days Parade will roll out at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 18th, including a multi-plane flyover before the parade begins. The parade itself features floats, Western trick-riding cowboys and their horses, marching bands, plus classic cars with the Borrego Springs queens and princesses. At Christmas Circle, you can visit booths offering artwork, handmade goods, crafts, and foods.
There's also a carnival fun zone for kids and for adults, a beer garden, and live music to dance into the sunset and under the clear, starry night sky. For more information, visit BoregoDays.com.
And the Borrego Foundation is kicking off the fall season in the desert with its fourth annual Pints for the Park as part of Borrego Days on Saturday, October 19th from 5 p.m. to 7:30. The event includes tastes from microbreweries, live music, and food from Carmelita's Mexican Grill and Cantina, all to benefit the foundation, which supports California's largest state park, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The event will be held at the mall in Borrego Springs, and tickets are available at theabf.org.
The San Diego Green Building Council, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable building and community practices in San Diego, will host its 10th annual Green Homes Tour on Saturday, October 19th and Sunday, October 20th. The tour has been expanded this year to 2 full days, showcasing a diverse collection of the most innovative, eco-friendly homes in our region. Saturday will include homes in Central San Diego, East County, and South County. Sunday will focus on homes in North County. Find more information at sdgreenhomestour.org.
HauntFest in downtown El Cajon is expected to draw about 40,000 visitors on Friday, October 25th from 5 to 10 p.m. The 8th annual HauntFest includes live music on 2 stages, costume contests on the Main Street stage, expanded carnival rides and games, candy challenges, a kids' zone, face painting, performances by TNT dancers and the Arts in Motion crew and junior crew. There's also the St. Madeline Sophie Center pumpkin patch, craft and game booths, an LED rock wall, inflatable jumps for kids, showings of the first 2 Harry Potter movies, and more. Find all the haunting details at hauntfest.org.
Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center has Halloween-themed events coming up, including a Halloween doggy costume contest and parade on October 26th, and then a costume contest and parade for people on October 27th. Guests can also enjoy music, food, and more. For more information on these and other events, you can visit batesnutfarm.biz with a Z.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights ends its season October 30th with Trunk or Treat, including music, treats, and a full street closure along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.